brings us to the general discussion session. And the organizers asked the theorists to chair this observational results session. They obviously were not really that sure about their idea. And to keep things from going too wrong, they told me how I should start this discussion session. And actually, as a theorist, I was really proud when this was exactly the same idea I had independently. So we start with a short presentation by Makato Miyoshi from Japan about the BOVI observations of such a star at the first time in 2001. Just a few minutes.
We have performed using NVIDIA VA for detecting perturbations of SIR laser stars around Cygnus star. Here I show result on Cygnus star itself. This is observed at the 2007 July, at the end of July. This is the time just Shen-san mentioned in his last talk. The scale is about 3 milliseconds or 500 Schwarzschild-Rayleigh or 24 astronomical units. The white part is consistent with other observations of Cygnus A star by VAVA, but we have found elongated feature here, here, and here. And this is the same image, but differently expressed by contour map. And
what level are you talking about?
5%, 10%,
or?
Here, the three sigma, the lower contour is 3 sigma level. 3, 5, 7, and 9, and 20, 40, and 80. Okay. And we also detected with the same calibration, exactly the same calibration, we detected silicon monoxide laser emissions from IR-10EE. This map shows the scale is 10 milliarcsecond or 80 astronomical units at 8 cube per second. And I think the image of Cygnus A star, this elongated image, is not a wrong image, but a true image, I think. Because the same calibration find out in IR-10EE, the different shape of SIO measures, I show this. Here is a channel map of SIO measures in IR-10EE, B equal to J equal 1 to 1. Here is the spot. Channel 7 is a very dark spot, and channel 8 is a different place. Also, we see a very dark, can you see?
No.
Dark spot. And another channel shows very different shapes of SIR laser features. And here is the center system we observe. But the experts on Cygnus A star point out the shape is very symmetric, which should be from long amplitude calibrations. And they say we use a data set of longer baseline than 2,000 kilometers. This is impossible, but I can do it. Cygnus A star is resolved in such a long baseline, they say. Then they conclude the image is not true. I don't think so. If you say this is true, you must show the strong evidence. And then, I am also an expert. I will check again the calibration of each long baseline. When I back to Japan, we have one advantage. We have SIO laser emissions. can SR laser emissions be detected or not from long baselines which, with the same calibrations? And another, we will soon get new data set from behavior observations. Then we reduce them to check we can find the similar structure or not. And this is important. If there is a major emission, I understand EE is strong enough, we can use a phase reference to the feature. So I will try phase referencing mapping to our status system. Then I will report the result of my checking to the experts. And if after confirmation of this image, that image means CITAS A star had a jet of about 10% light speed motion and with at least 10% flux density of all emission of, at 43 GHz. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's start the discussion.
Which is the North?
I'm Japanese.
Yes.
In Japanese.
Would that be odd if somebody would translate it?
In English.
Which is the north? Which is the north direction?
North is
north is up. In English. In
English.
In this place. North is. Can you put your image of the laser up from the previous slide?
This back. Go back.
Go back.
Which one?
Movie going.
Yeah,
that
this is
that one. It's an overlay of all the maps.
Right, okay. Now, I'll show tomorrow an image, a VLBI image of this.
Same study?
Same source, right. Okay. And you will see that there are only two spots that are separated by a milliarc second, which means the stuff you see going diagonally up and down, I don't see. And that's very similar to what you're seeing in the
same. Which epoch? Same epoch?
1996.
Different epoch. As you know, SR laser has a very time operation in shape.
Yeah, but not the extent of the SIL laser shell. That does not.
I hope I understand the logic of your picture here. So you're saying that if SIO is right, then Century Star is right, right? That's your logic, I presume, right? I mean, you're showing this picture. I presume the reason for showing this picture is, say, the SIO picture is right, therefore Century Star is right, because you apply the same procedure, right?
Same calibration.
Yeah, exactly. But how do we know the SIO is right?
I don't know.
Oh.
I don't know, but there is a different shapes.
Okay.
This extension on 10% level, which you wouldn't see there. I mean, it's just a sort of 2% level of the total flux. So that wouldn't really, you know, be visible on any such image. Even if it were right, you still wouldn't see that. Really.
You see, I think 10% level is not sufficient to see. Thank you.
Any other comments? On this page, okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much again. As we need to finish in time, we have only a quarter of an hour left anyway. I wanted to address three points I wanted to hear a little more of your opinion on each of them. And why don't we simply work our way up the frequency, up the energy range, and first go from the,
not are you using that or not?
A little later. First, I wanted to ask again one of the poster presentations to say a little more about her poster, namely Susan Stolovy, about the infrared, the near-infrared flux limits, as this is one of the really important things for us theorists when modeling the spectra of such a star.
Okay, thank you.
Just
yeah, I didn't come prepared with overhead, but I do have mini versions of my books there, which I can barely even read. But I will tell you the techniques. First of all, I basically went through and looked at all the NICMAS data that were taken in the first epoch of NICMAS, which means 1997, 1998. And these are wavelengths that range from 1.1 microns to 2.2. And the more interesting part is certainly the shorter wavelength, since you can do much better at 2.2 microns from the ground with adaptive optics. And I have done analysis on both the continuum limits and also in the ionized gas in Paschen Alpha to see what's going on there. And on the ionized gas, I only have two epochs, March and October 98, and I'd encourage you to look at my poster after cleaning up all the PSF residuals from very bright Paschen Alpha emitters like the IR16 stars. You can now actually get, for the first time, an image of the diffuse ionized emission near Sag A star. And they look different in the two epochs, but I don't know which blobs are moving where, so I really need more than two epochs to do it right. If it looks like some of the blobs are moving where I think they are, then it means several thousand kilometers a second motion in the gas. Now on the continuum limits, I've taken images and done point source extraction techniques using StarFinder, which is a great piece of IDL software. I encourage you to try it out. And I both added and subtracted sources from the position of Sag A star and came up with a bunch of limits that range in magnitude, if I can read this, at 1.1 microns from about observed of 23.5 magnitudes. And it of course goes up with the longer wavelengths due to extinction. Once you dereddon, you get, basically you can hide a point source of 12th or 13th magnitude in there and not detect it. So comparing to theoretical models, we're talking about 10 millijanskis for all of the wavelengths dereddened, and it's above the theoretical model curves from one, as you've seen today, from Liu and Melia, 2002. They actually have two models. One was shown today, the Bremsstrahlung model. There's also a self-comptonization model, and it's above both of those, so that's unfortunate. We can't limit those models, but it does say that they could be correct. That's also comparing to the quiescent and the flare spectrum. So if there had been a flare during our NICMAS observations at the same level of the first Chandra flare, which was, 50 times brighter than quiescent, we would not have detected it in our NICMAS data. So, but I would like to say that we would love to have more epochs, not only for the Paschen Alpha to see where the gas is going, but because S2, which is the brightest source in that central cluster, is moving away now from Sag A star, it means it's going to be clearing out an area and will be much more sensitive. We're basically limited by the fact that we have 43 milliarc second pixels. And if we can get less and less crowding of PSFs, that would be better. So I think in the coming years, we'll be able to put that limit lower, I hope, if we get data.
How do your limits compare with the limits that the Keck group gave?
For 2.2 microns, the Keck limit is much, much better, much more sensitive than ours.
Our 2 micron limit for the quiescent state is 2 millijanskis.
Dereddon. And I was getting 11 millijanskis. But also, let me just say, camera 2 is, the 2.2 microns is camera 2 with NICMAS, so it's much bigger pixels, 76 milliarc seconds, so it's not that useful for this particular project.
Are there any questions or comments to this? If not, so let's go to the X-ray light curve. That's a transparency prepared by Philip Riedel. It's your the brightness of Sag A star. And now let me ask you.
Those are detections off limits.
We'll come to this. wait a moment. About 5 or 10 years ago, you X-ray observers told us theorists the fluxes that you observed. We didn't believe you, and
you laughed about us. Now let me ask you a provocative question. Why do you believe you now when modeling such a star? I'm not saying that your observations are wrong, not at all. I'm impressed by what you're doing, but why should I believe you? I'm not saying that I don't, but I want to be convinced by you. Why should I believe you when you tell me what, for instance, the minimum flux this just tells me that you have 10 minutes left. why should we believe that the quiescent flux that you observe is from such a star only?
Let me comment on that image a little bit, because we know since quite a while that there is a variable.
Please explain this part.
Yes, this shows the measured Lx of something depending on the angular resolution of instruments. So this is also something versus time.
Right.
And we know since quite a while, since the early 90s, measured with RP, and also since the late 80s with Jerry Skinner's SLX experiment, that there is a variable source, because they had measured variability within a factor 2 or 4, but on a level of 10 to the 36 ergs per second. So regardless what they got or what they picked up within their error circle or in a radio terminology beam size, and if you subtract that, there remains something on the level of 10 to the 36. And this is a variability means always a point source. But now we don't see anything which points to such a strong source. So either Sagittarius A star or whatever it is behaves differently now since compared to that what was 15 years ago, or they did wrong. Then, 1994, when we resolved the point source with ROSA within an error box of 8 arc seconds, we discussed whether we had a chance to pick up a background or serendipitous source, and we came to the conclusion that the likelihood, the probability of picking up an X-ray binary is rather low given the density of or the number of X-ray binaries we know from the galaxy. Now we know that we were wrong. So we picked up at least 6 other sources and also part of Sagittarius A East, Chandra and XMM have seen. And now, turning to the flare Chandra and XMM have seen, Andrea pointed out that the kind of the flare we are seeing now points to a black hole. So this is nothing similar to an X-ray binary, a low mass X-ray binary or something like that. But given the fact that the Chandra error box is only 0.5 arc seconds, which is a factor of 400 better than that what ROSA did, so the probability picking up another source and other than Sagittarius A star goes also down. So I'm pretty sure that the flare comes from really Sagittarius A star, but I'm doubting, or there's still a probability that the quiescent flux still is picking up something else in addition. So to a theorist, don't trust the quiescent flux.
You should be sure we are not making more doubt. Mark.
Let me add to that. I agree with you. The flare flux very likely comes from Sagittarius A star, but the quiescent flux is indeed coincident, and as Fred pointed out, it isn't a slightly extended and coincident with the central stellar cluster. And I think a lot of work still needs to be done to sum the expected X-ray emission from the central cluster of stars. After all, we don't know what the stellar population exactly consists of. The S stars themselves are odd O-type stars. They're within this cluster. The actual shape of the Sagittarius A star, Fred can comment on this, the actual shape of the Sagittarius A star X-ray emission doesn't match the shape of the central stellar cluster, but we don't know what the concentration of the various types of stellar populations are, nor do we have a really clear picture since a given type of star, like an O star, can vary in its X-ray output from 10 to the 30th to several 10 to the 31st, 10 to 32 Earths per second, what the sum of all those stars should be given. Right? So I think that this basically a lot of work needs to be done to completely rule out the possibility of this stellar emission.
Robert?
Yeah, I'd like to focus on the quiescent emission. First thing that Fred said that it is spatially resolved. I want to make sure how reliable that conclusion is, because it was already spatially resolved with the old 50 kilosecond data. Now you've got 10 times the data, so I was just wondering how strong it is. And the second point was, you showed an ion line. If it is a sum of a zillion stars, do we expect such a strong narrow ion line? I mean, this was not clear to me, so I was wondering if somebody could comment on that.
Unfortunately, I had meant to download this image, send the revised first paper. Here, what I've done is I've done radial annuli to Sagittarius Starline right, for two nearby point sources. And the two point sources are here. And this is Sagittarius Starline, or at least this is the emission going out to seven pixels, so 3.5 arc seconds. And the source at the location of Sagittarius Starline is clearly resolved. There's no doubt about that anymore. What was a problem in the first draft of the paper was the aspect camera had 1 pixel problems. This observation was done in the first week of the mission. And it took them a while to fix that problem and reprocess my data and give it back.
But this is still the original data, right?
This is still the new data. I haven't looked at the large data set. But I have no doubt that it's the emission at that location is resolved. Now, I'm not claiming one way or the other whether that resolved emission is Sagittarius Starline or not. However, if you just do a naive Gaussian quadrature deconvolution, you get a standard deviation of 0.6 arc seconds, which is Bonnie radius, more or less. Why would it be such a good match?
I just want to understand myself, at least the flare characteristics of Sagittarius Starline. Is that just really unique, or do you see similar behavior in AGN?
We do not see similar behavior.
Sorry?
In AGN, we see that, yes.
So in AGN, you do see that. So it's like other AGN.
No, this is
why. All right, I get two different answers.
AGN show flicker noise.
No. There are huge flares.
Yes. Those are modern style
disruptions. This is what people assume. From a phenomenological point of view, we see flares of a factor of 100 in AGNs occasionally. And this is similar to that.
What in blazons?
The duration.
Yeah, on hours and days.
Well, in the TV blazon, of course, you have gamma ray flares within 20 minutes, but these are blazons, right? And that's where you see such major flares. Blazer.
I have one AGN in mind, but I don't
AGN
know the
is
phone
not AGN.
Number of it. right
I just wanted to see if it's unique. It's not unique.
We don't see any other AGN at the level of 10 to 34 or 35 Hertz per second. So we have no information about whether other AGNs behave in this way.
Other than the luminosity, you will not see these flares even in Andromeda. You could not do it. They're not bright enough to see them, even in the nearest spiral galaxy. Yeah. So by the time you go to the quote-unquote low luminosity AGN, your orders of magnitude brighter. And why should we necessarily expect accretion flow? Physics is exactly the same.
But you wasn't asking for an AGN.
Yeah, well, we just want to see if it's really unique. But is that just not unique? I don't know.
You mean the time scale, right?
No.
Is it?
As an object, right? Is it unique?
Ramesh.
I just wanted to come back to my second question, right, about the ion line. Could the stellar experts here tell me whether a cluster of stars will produce that kind of an ion line?
Sure.
Okay, I just want to know.
So the arch cluster shows a very strong ion line.
Similar spectrum?
I'm not sure it's similar, but it shows the ion line.
How about the line width?
Line width should not be resolved because considering the velocity, right? The X-ray data don't have the kind of resolution yet to resolve the Doppler velocity.
Right.
follow up on that line. Now, you showed a, when your new results in your quiescent spectrum on a line at 6.6 kV, is that right? Which does not correspond to the iron line. I was wondering if it could be gravitationally redshifted 6.7 of a, say, a jet that's escaping the black hole. Put out an idea.
Let me address one issue you want. Sagittarius star is unusual for AGN in one respect. The radio is brighter than the X-ray.
Polarization. Yeah. The polarization characteristics are very different.
No, it's not going to be. So, I don't know that the accretion flow process.
The radio, you mean in terms of luminosity? The radio is only 10 to 34 or something.
And the radio.
Ratio.
Right?
No?
Something
to be said. Something to be said.
That's what Ho shows in his little
classic. I do not understand that. This is no AGN, as we know. Why should we compare this AGN?
I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm just old fashioned. The standard sort of supermassive black hole equation, this is the paradigm we're talking about. Isn't that sort of the basic starting point of what we're comparing all these different objects? I mean, am I just sort of too far?
That's the introduction of trying to get. That was the introduction
It's naturally the least luminous that one we have, so you cannot compare it to the most luminous one. And it's obvious that there's luminosity difference. Now, are there differences in detail? Of course, there are lots of differences in detail, but it has a lot of characteristics which are the same.
Right.
You know, I mean, the radio and radio spectrum is quite typical for all you see in AGN. The variability is also not totally unheard of, especially since it comes from the.
Yeah, I think you can say the radio spectrum is typical for AGN. Name another AGN that has a sublunar bump.
M81 is a very good example. We haven't.
We don't know if it has a sublunar.
Well, but there were claims about it and a bump there, but that needs to be established better. That's true.
Right.
Yeah. And there's hardly any other AGN where you can see that deep into the nucleus. In most other cases, you have other components which are dominating lower frequency emission, which are bigger, and so it's actually one where we get the closest to the black hole itself. I mean, that is the big difference. When you're looking here at 10 gravitational radii, we know that from the X-rays, we know that from VOBI, that you have 10, 20 gravitational radii from the black hole. Hardly any other black hole we get that close. That is something really new that we learned.
The word moderate comes from the Latin and means to calm down. That's what I need to do now, as we are already past actually the allocated time for the session. Thank you very much.